to the John Gambling Show with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
It is 9 minutes after 8 o'clock, and the mayor is here with me, John Gambling, along with a guest, Tom Foley, the health commissioner. Mr. Mayor and Commissioner, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Nice to see you both.
That's why we're here. Well, I'm here because you told me to be here. Tom is here because he wanted to talk about heat.
Yeah, JJ's been saying heat indices tomorrow of 105 in the city.
Yeah, it's hot and it's been hot. And for most of us, it's just a discomfort. But for some people, it can be dangerous or even deadly. So we're getting the message out about who's at risk and what they can do to protect themselves.
All right, and it's those...
I'm going to go visit a cooling center right after the show. That's, I'm going to duck out a little early. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
Just to make sure we'll get some press about it. And that's good because we want to tell people if you're really in trouble, you can go to a cooling center. But the thing that I would urge everybody, just use some common sense. You know, you don't go out in the midday sun. You drink a lot of water. You wear light and white clothing to reflect the sun. And you stop in or ring the doorbell or make a phone call to any neighbor, you know, elderly, people that might handicap, people that might need some help, and say, hey, you know, I'm your neighbor. Anything I can do to help? Nice thing to do. You'll feel better about it, and you can maybe make a difference.
I know everybody is an individual and is different, but dehydration and heat stroke or heat effect, how quickly can it come on?
Can come on in a period of hours. And again, it's not everybody that's equally affected. The people who are particularly at risk are the elderly, people with chronic medical conditions like heart disease or lung disease, people with psychiatric problems. And those people, when it's prolonged heat, especially as it's approaching 100 degrees, if they don't have an air conditioner, they can rapidly get into trouble, and some of them can even die. We actually have more deaths from heat than we do from all other natural disasters combined.
Really?
Yes.
I was reading a story the other day about the heat wave of, what, 1886 or something like that? Where 13...
You weren't around then. Come
no,
on.
No, but my great-grandfather was. He was doing radio back then, where 1,300 people died during that.
Well, you know, as recently as 1995 in the heat wave in Chicago, there were 700 people that died over a matter of a few days, so many that the coroner had trouble keeping the bodies in the morgue. So it's really something we need to take seriously. As in 2006, we had 40 people who died of heat stroke in New York City. So far, we feel like we've done a good job with making the cooling centers available in the city, and we don't have evidence of heat-related deaths in New York, but we want to continue to get the message out for people at risk to get in a cool setting.
And I'm certain that if somebody wanted to know where a cooling center is...
What would you do?
I would call 311, but I don't know what they would do.
That is why you are whom you are. You know, not only did you used to be John Gambling, you are John Gambling.
So that's good. That is.
But I think the message is, all kidding aside, it's fun to joke about, but it is serious. And you got to drink a lot of water, and you got to exercise some common sense.
And a lot of people are going to head for pools in the oceans and other waters as
just
well.
I don't care how hot you are. You don't go in the water unless there's a lifeguard there. I mean, we had a couple kids drown very tragically. One even tried to save the other one in the Bronx River. There were beaches and swimming pools within a few minutes with lifeguards. I mean, it just... Nobody thinks it's going to happen to them, but the bottom line is water can be dangerous, particularly when you go into the ocean or onto Long Island Sound. There really are currents that can take you out. I don't care how good a swimmer you are.
Knowing how to swim, would that be something that would fall under the Commissioner of Health's aegis?
Well, you know, we do keep track of drownings, and we certainly see drowning as a health problem that we track, but we are not in the job of training people to swim.
We are our education department. We have some programs to try to train kids to swim.
Because there's a significant population that does not know how to swim.
That is correct, and we try to do that. You know, there's never enough money to do it, and some people don't have, I don't know, I'll learn, what's the big deal? Reading a book about swimming is not the same thing as knowing how to swim. It takes some practice. And, parents should make sure their kids, you can go to a public pool. We'll figure out ways to teach
them. Yeah, and other organizations, the Y's, and they have pools. And
I mean, if you want to do it, call 311 and talk to the operator and figure out some ways. We'll figure out ways to do it.
All right. Commissioner, before you go, I want to ask you about flu this season. What are you anticipating?
Well, last year, as we know, we had a pandemic of a new H1N1 influenza virus. That virus is still around. It's circulating in the southern hemisphere. We expect it'll be back, maybe in combination with other flu viruses. We now have a vaccine for it, and the regular flu vaccine this year will combine that new H1N1 virus with the other strains. And so our message is, as it is other years, get vaccinated against it. We're particularly going to be focusing on children because increasingly there's evidence that if we vaccinate children, that'll help protect everybody else.
Don't look at me. I'm not a child anymore. I can't. I'm not going to protect you. But I mean, you know, we were lucky. We had one of the first outbreaks here. If you remember the Mexico thing, whatever happened in Mexico? Did we ever figure out how many people really died?
No, we don't know how many people died, and we don't know how many people got infected. But it was similar to us, and an awful lot of people got infected over a short period of time, and a small percentage of them had very serious illness.
Right now, here in New York, we had remember that early outbreak when kids came back from Mexico. I think they had gone down there, and everybody panicked. Isn't quite the right word, but it got an awful lot of press. A few people tragically did die. A few people were tragically were very in the hospital for a while. Most had very mild symptoms. And then that was in the spring. And then this last fall, the country had a wave of flu, and we did not, basically. Is that fair?
We had a very mild wave in the fall, probably because we had such a severe wave
in the spring. He wants to keep his agency going, a mild wave. There was nobody that got it, or almost.
But it was the ones that had a mild spring, they had a severe fall, and more of us got infected here in the spring.
And with our instant communication, the whole world, the whole global picture starts to come into play, even in a local situation.
Well, it's a 24-hour news cycle, too. You have to have a story. Okay, I mean, there has to be a victim for everything. There has to be a potential for worldwide collapse. And you know, common sense. Don't spread the flu. If you feel, if you got a cold, stay home. And most of you, and this flu actually, is it fair to say, Tom, that it was actually very mild. Normally, a lot of people, 2,000 people die of influenza or pneumonia every year in New York City. And this year, it was a lot less than that.
Yeah, because this virus seemed to be mainly affecting children. The older people seem to have some sort of antibodies from years ago that protected them. And so because of that, yes, it was milder. We didn't know that was the case when it started out, but that's what it turned out to be.
I am not an epidemiologist, but is it fair to say I predicted it?
You were right, I have to admit it.
Good answer, Tom. Right. Good answer. Whether
No. My job's to pick him and his predecessor. They're the experts, but, you know.
Tom, good to see you. Thanks.
Drink a lot of water, stay out of the midday sun, exercise some common sense, and look in on your neighbors.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to look in on a little business right here, Mr. Mayor. We're coming right back.
On News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
21 minutes after 8 o'clock, 8:21, Mayor Michael Bloomberg with John Gambling. Mr. Mayor, you've mentioned it before, but I saw another article on the hedge fund tax that is...
just hedge funds.
No, but just the upper echelon taxes.
People can move. I mean, first rule of taxation is don't tax somebody that can move.
Governor Rell is looking to grab them into Connecticut.
Well, Governor Rell is doing exactly what Governor Rell should do, try to point out the advantages that Connecticut has. For business there. It's her job. My job's to point out the advantages that New York City and New York State have. That's my job. But in the end, it's not about the presentation. It's about the facts. And we are a very high tax state, high tax city. I think you get a lot for that, but there is a limit. And if the taxes are more onerous than the values that you receive for it, then common sense says people will leave. I mean, some people move to Florida. Florida doesn't have an income tax, doesn't have an inheritance tax. And a lot of people retire down there. New York City employees, New York City private sector workers, when they retire, they go down there rather than staying here. Now, some actually are moving here because of the quality of life. That's what we have to offer. Florida, there's nothing wrong with the quality of life in Florida, but we have a lot more in terms of the arts and excitement and, you know, New York diversity and that sort of thing. And if those are the things that are value, I'm fascinated by everybody making some of these op-ed guys, they make fun of all of these art projects. That's our future. We have our tourism business is almost down nothing. Next numbers may show that we're down not at all. The rest of this country's down double digits. That we have more people working in tourism today than ever before. Tourism is jobs. Tourism is a tax base. And our cops and our firefighters and our teachers and the services they provide all get paid for by things like tourism. So you want to make that edgy. Other businesses, you want to make it easier to do business. We have this whole program to try to make it permitting a lot easier. And taxes are a very
big
deal.
What's the trend been with manufacturing in the city proper?
Well, it's down from the olden days. In the olden days, virtually all business was manufacturing. Today, most big chunk of business is service. We think it's about 500,000 people that work in the city in manufacturing. But what constitutes manufacturing changes over time. The manufacturing businesses that will thrive here are those that require what we provide and don't require what others provide. What do others provide? There are places in the world where people work for next to nothing. That's not New York. There are places in the world and in the country where there's enormous space. So if your business is growing corn or having a steel mill, New York City's not the place you're going to do it because space is important. If your business is making 1 million T-shirts, we're not going to have that business either. That's going to be overseas. On the other hand, if your business requires expertise and intellect and degree of a work ethic that only New Yorkers, not only New Yorkers, but New Yorkers have, then this is the place for you. And so what we're trying to do is to make it a better place for people. And if the best and the brightest want to live here, then companies have to come here because that's where they can get their employees. So you're not going to make those 1 million T-shirts, but you are going to make couture dresses, and you are going to make the fashion industry is going to be here because they want to be where the press is and the buzz is and each other. Critical mass in an industry like that's important. Biotech and IT, we're becoming an IT center. If you're in the plumbing business, it's the plumbers, the manufacturers of the higher end, less mass but more fancy for sophisticated plumbing kind of things. Carpentry, it's a level here that you don't get anyplace else.
Yeah, in fact, I was over at a wood floor manufacturer, mm-hmm. with skills that you just don't find anywhere else.
You know, the other thing I keep coming back to is this work ethic. You go into my favorite restaurant, if I had to eat all the meals the rest of my life, it's a Greek diner around the corner. The food's great. The people are nice. It's low cost. Everything comes instantly. But you watch the guy behind the counter and you say, I want a ham and cheese or BLT or a tuna fish on toast with this. Bang, 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 bang. It's there. You go elsewheres in the country and it's overstating it to say everybody, but they work a lot slower. And that's just making sandwiches. And that's true of New Yorkers. We have, there's a pace of life here, which isn't for everybody. And I'm not suggesting, if it was for everybody, we couldn't be here. But it's, if you like the fast pace and the constant accountability and competition, New York's the place for you. People who want to put their feet up don't come to New York. Lazy people, who want to just relax in life. There's nothing wrong with that, but this is not where you come. Anyway, so get back to the taxes. It's not just that everybody's focusing on the hedge fund tax, but there's all sorts of other taxes. You start taxing people who can move. They'll take their companies with them and the jobs with them. 0.5% of the people in New York City who pay taxes pay 50% of our personal income tax. 0.5%. And then people say, oh, the rich don't pay their share. Well, I don't know what share is, but if half of 1% is paying half of all the taxes.
You don't want to lose them.
You don't want to lose them. Half of all of the tax filers have a negative or a zero tax rate. You get a negative tax rate when the government gives you more money through earned income tax credit than you pay in. So your tax rate is really negative. You're getting money. And if you don't make up to a certain level, you don't have to pay any taxes. So out of the 3.4 million tax filers, some are families, some are individuals, half don't pay any taxes.
In the theoretical, is that a bad thing that half the people don't pay any taxes?
Well, that's a social policy issue.
I understand, but I'm just
curious. I have always thought that everybody should pay something. Even if you're don't have very much money, you shouldn't have to pay very much taxes. But everybody should feel that they are part of the solution and part of the problem and bear responsibility. And so I think it's not right that you ever get to zero. If you have a tax bill of $1, you should file a return and pay your dollar to understand where the money's coming from and that it's not free. And if you do that, then people who are paying the big bulk of the taxes feel, okay, you know, it's a fairer system. We have a graduated tax in the country. That's a concept that came in many years ago, and I don't happen to think that's wrong. Even if you didn't, if you just had a constant rate, those that make more would pay more. Graduated tax means those that make more pay more and more, if you will. But nobody should escape, because then you don't feel that you're part of government. You don't feel you should vote. You don't feel that you have a responsibility.
Yeah, because it doesn't. Nothing matters. Any decision doesn't matter to you when it comes to taxes.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
dollars.
It's just
you're not a flat tax guy. You don't.
Flat taxes doesn't work. I mean, it's not a concept. Number one, we're not going to have it, so it isn't worth discussing. But a similar kind of social policy that impacts fiscal policy is home ownership. And if you go back and look, standards for giving out mortgages over the years got relaxed greatly. And then two years ago, when the mortgage market collapsed, everybody with great angst pointed out correctly that some people were losing their houses. But if you had not relaxed those standards, an awful lot of people who have homes today wouldn't have them. And I would bet you 90% of the people that were at the edge as to whether or not they really should qualify for a mortgage, they still have their homes, they're still living there, they're still paying their mortgages. And if to protect the 10%, you would have taken away the 90% of that whole group. So an aggressive policy, even though it means that there will be some people at the edge who really do get hurt, and then we have a responsibility to help them. If you don't have that, you're going to not have what you'd like, which is an awful lot of more home ownership. Home ownership, all the statistics show you take care of the neighborhood, you care more about your schools, you are better, you're more likely to vote, participate in democracy. Lots of good things come with home ownership.
Are you suggesting that we should pay for people who can't afford the home, can't afford a home?
No. I'm just simply saying that when the banks and the mortgage lenders reduce the standards, and everybody is criticizing them, and we all say, oh, they never should have given mortgages to this group of people who marginally are at the edge of qualifying to be able to pay their mortgage by some standards. If we hadn't let that happen, an awful lot fewer people would have been able to buy houses, and most of those people that did buy their houses still have their houses today.
I guess you're right. I don't know the statistic on that.
It's a small percentage of that group that in the end defaulted.
But the ones that defaulted out.
Well, that's another social policy. You know, a vacant house in the neighborhood brings down the value of everything in that neighborhood. So just from a selfish point of view, you say, well, why help them? Well, because you're helping yourself. You could make that argument. There's the social issue, the compassion issue. You could say, well, we want to help people. But those are that's a different question as to what do you do. And keep in mind, the city has a number of programs to provide counseling, and there's some angel funds that will help you. So if you're in danger of losing your home, call 311. If you've lost your home, call 311. There are programs. What we're talking about is this yelling and screaming that we should never have given everybody mortgages forgets about the fact that most of the people that got those mortgages still have them and are doing fine, thank you, or okay, are getting along. And home ownership is a desirable thing from a social policy point of view. And, you know, the mortgage market goes up and the real estate market goes up and down, and there will always be cycles. And in down markets, we look for victims in this day and age. Nobody's going to stop the tides from coming in with reasonable regularity.
Well, that's certainly the truth. Let's take a break right here, Mr. Mayor. Half hour break. Joe Bartlett's got some news. We've got some commercials. Back with Michael. 22 before 9 o'clock. We've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg for a little bit more here. Cory Booker seems to have caught the disease of budgetary problems over in Newark.
It's pretty hard to find a place that doesn't have, at least in the Northeast. But Booker's a smart guy, and he'll do a good job.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a city council that he's dealing with, and that's one of his
problems. Democracy.
Well, but it is.
It's part of the job.
It's interesting.
You shouldn't let me off the hook with the city council or Obama off with Congress. That's part of the job. You don't want the job, don't take it.
No, I understand, but the CEOs, President yourself, yeah. Cory Booker, and then the legislators, the legislatures don't seem to get it all the time. I mean, they just seem to be entranced.
When people act irrationally, my theory is 99 times out of 100, you don't understand what their objectives are. That most people do not act irrationally. So if you see a legislator or an executive doing something or voting in a ways that doesn't make any sense to you, sit back and say, why would a rational person do what they do? What must be their motives? You can impute their motives from their actions.
Or inactions.
Or inactions, same thing, sure. I mean, traditionally, leaderships of legislative bodies try not to embarrass their caucuses. So if there's a controversial bill where some of their caucus wants it and some of their caucuses don't, the leader's job is to make sure it never gets to the floor so that both sides can go back and say, if it had come to the floor, I would have given you what you want. And that's just the way all legislatures work.
Yeah, I get that mixed up sometimes.
So. Yeah, it's hard.
All right.
And my mother wants to know why I'm studying Spanish when I haven't learned to speak English.
Did I read correctly that
yes.
the city is thinking about charging people for their garbage?
No, I was asked the question, would we consider it? And the answer is we'll consider it along with everything else. We already do for 50% of the garbage in this city. I don't know what you're talking about. We collect 22,000 tons a day. 11,000 tons, roughly, are collected from commercial buildings. That is all done
privately.
People pay, the buildings or the owners pay to have it collected. You're only talking about the other half. We do it half already, so, you know, why should this be a surprise? Will we do it? Well, number one, you'd need the legislature to go along. Number two, nobody wants to have these fees or taxes, except is it better or worse than the other things? There is a social redeeming purpose in charging for fees because it would force people, you would think, to recycle more, although I think you can overstate how much. Some would, in some cases they're not. There is a lot of elasticity, and they wouldn't. It wouldn't change behavior, but you can't. You know, remember, if you go back to Bush 41, read my lips. You can't do that. You can't say never. I don't know what holds down the road. I can tell you this: the city's budget is balanced for this year. The city's revenues are reasonably. No, I think our predictions are pretty good. The only thing really up, there's two things still up in the air. One, whether we get FMAP money, that's $300 million this year. And I've said, unless Congress really calls and says it's not going to happen, we will wait until October-ish, maybe a little bit before then, to deal with that gap, because I'm not sure it's going to happen. And then we still don't know what's going to happen with Albany, and Albany just does not come up with a budget. They're not in session. They're not doing anything. I criticized them the other day. I don't know what they're going to do, which we may find more or less painful, but the uncertainty leaves all cities in a very difficult position. That's not good. And if I long ago bet 25 cents with somebody, they would be unlikely to have a budget before November. And, you know, if you wanted to make the bet today.
I think you're right.
Well, I should call the guy and see if he wants to sell me back his bet for 20 cents and take the 20 cents right now.
Because that way they don't have to have their fingerprints on
anything. But that's what's really scary for our next fiscal year, because what they don't do this year gets pushed into next year. And next year they had a problem anyways. And if we don't get our $300 million for 2 years or $600 million in FMAP money, they don't get the $2 billion that they think they're getting. And if they don't get it, that's going to be the burden is going to be pushed back on us, because the only way the state balances their budget is by going after where the money is. That's New York City, where the taxpayers are. That's not good. Then there's Jody Rell out there saying, come to Connecticut and New Jersey. Christie would love to have him over there. I was talking to him the other day, you know. he's working as hard as he can to balance the budget. It's contentious. The legislature, though, and the governor there are working together and getting things done. We need the same thing to happen. And we had some of that is. It's not fair to Albany to say they're doing nothing. They have done a lot. The spending side has been passed, whether it's good or bad. It's the revenue side that they really can't come up with. There's some big disagreements, and you know they're going to have to work that out.
I know you got to run. One more question for you. I don't know if you saw this story this morning about America and the number of people that hold degrees, whether they're associate degrees or full bachelor or whatever. We used to be first. We're now 12th.
Our objective in the New York City school system, we keep measuring ourselves by how many people get a high school diploma. That used to be the key to being able to get a good job. For example, you can't come to work for the city for the sanitation department unless you have a high school diploma or a GED. We still have a long ways to go. We're making big progress, particularly among minorities. It really is going in the right direction. But just because you have the piece of paper doesn't mean it's sufficient to be able to get a good job and compete in the real world. So some of these people, when they get a degree, when they get to the next step, whether it's college or a job, need remedial help. But what's happened is the level where you really have education on average that you need to get a good job has now gone from high school to, let's say, 2 years of junior college or right. community college. We don't have remotely enough capacity for everybody to go to those 2 years. I've always thought that, that you can think of community college as grades 13 and 14, and that we should just...
Precisely what the college board
I haven't read the thing yet.
Is talking about P through 16.
Right, that's exactly right. What you should do. But the staring us in the face is the need to have 4 year college. There isn't remotely a chance. We can't get everybody through high school. How are you going to get them through junior college and our community colleges and then through a regular 4 year program? Very difficult, very scary, staring us in the face. And we have gone from being at the top to 12th, as you say. Our public our schools K down are way down in the pack in terms of international comparisons. Our schools of higher education, undergraduate and graduate school, are still the best in the world. But we are working as hard as we can to destroy that. If you take a look, California had this public system of colleges and universities that was so good it was off the chart. It was the bellwether for the world of, God, if everybody could have Californias. They, because of their budget things, are starving their system and really hurting it. And in New York, we want to have our SUNY and CUNY be able to have different schools charging different things, accepting different students, making them real competitive, world-class schools. And some people in the legislature don't want that to happen. And so, you know, it's a very big problem, not the capacity and the quality.
And what it leaves you with is a group of people that can't do the work that's necessary to be done.
Well, I think that part of the what you see when the economy is getting better, but the unemployment is not going down, is that the people who there's a lot of jobs. And there's a lot of people, but the skill sets don't match.
Right.
And that's a very big problem. That's not everybody, but more and more that is going to, even if it isn't true today very much, it will be more true as you go forward here. A big societal problem that we really have to worry about. That's the bad news. The good news is there are more people working in New York City today than ever before in history.
That's really extraordinary.
Now, our unemployment rate is still 9.5%, but the unemployment rate is done by a telephone survey. And when the economy starts getting better, unemployment always goes up because more people say, I'm going to look for a job. I think there's a good chance of me getting a good job. I don't want to stay home anymore. It'd be fun. I could use the money, whatever. So the unemployment rate is not really a very good measure of how good your economy is. The number that is a good number because you know it's right in the sense that you have to report to the government for Social Security purposes and tax purposes, so those numbers are accurate, is the number of people employed, and New York is doing very well for that.
Good for us. Good for us indeed.
Thank you.
I know you got to run. Thank you for
Stay cool. Call your neighbor and drink a lot of fluids, light clothing.
All right. Mr. Mayor, we'll see you next week. Thank you very much, as always.